inflammatory posts and memes. Kaepernick would later tweet that police are modern-day slave catchers, and his girlfriend would compare the Baltimore Ravens owner to a plantation owner and call Ray Lewis the most famous Baltimore Raven of all time and Uncle Tom. Kaepernick was unsigned for the entirety of the 2017 football season and subsequently filed a collusion lawsuit against NFL owners, claiming they were unlawfully conspiring not to hire him. As part of that lawsuit, the NFL owners were deposed. What did Kaepernick wear to those depositions? A Kunta Kinte shirt and a Slave Patrol t-shirt. Seriously. Given his outlandish provocations, it's worth noting that Kaepernick is of mixed race. He has a white mother and a black father and was raised by a white family after his parents gave him up for adoption. Prior to his protest, Kaepernick was most well known for taking the San Francisco 49ers to the Super Bowl and losing to the Baltimore Ravens and Joe Flacco. He has made, at publication date, just shy of $44 million in his six seasons as an NFL quarterback, including $14.3 million in the final year he played in the NFL when Blaine Gabbert beat him out as a starting quarterback and he began his protest. He is 2-16 in his last 18 games as a starting quarterback in the NFL. Before we diagnose the liberal bias and the fawning media coverage that Kaepernick has received, let's aggressively unpack what Kaepernick has said. First, on the day he began his protest, "I am not going to stand up to show pride in a flag for a country that oppresses black people and people of color. To me, this is bigger than football, and it would be selfish on my part to look the other way. There are bodies in the street and people getting paid leave and getting away with murder." Even though he hasn't said it concretely, it appears that effectively Colin Kaepernick is protesting oppression against, quote, black people and people of color, and police shootings of minorities. Let's do what the media should have done and hold political figures, it seems clear that's what Kaepernick hopes to be, accountable for what they have said. First, the federal government is not oppressing black people or other people of color. There are no federal laws presently in place that discriminate against black people in this country. There is a difference between racism, which exists in this country, and oppression under the law based on race, which does not exist. This is not a controversial opinion for anyone with a legal background or a decent education in modern civics. Even still, you can't say there are no discriminatory laws on the books on ESPN. Indeed, ESPN's Paul Feinbaum, who hosts a four-hour daily radio show on the SEC network, went on ESPN and said exactly this about the Colin Kaepernick protest. "This country has issues, but this country is not oppressing black people." The resulting firestorm from the left unfolded in a now predictable manner. Feinbaum, who is a good friend of mine but didn't want to talk about the issue for this book, went back on television and said, "I could spend the rest of my life trying to talk my way out of it, but I can't. I blew it. I simply did not have a good grasp of the situation. I know better. I've lived in this country. I see what is going on across the country from north to south to east to west, and I have no excuse. I can't explain why I articulated the words the way I did, but I did, and there's a public record of it, and there's a natural reaction, and I respect that. All I can say is that I made a terrible mistake in trying to express a feeling that I probably, not probably, I had no right to express. I don't know whether this will mean anything to anyone, but I feel compelled to answer your question that way, that it was a terrible mistake on my part, and my eyes are wider open today than they have ever been as a result." I want you to think about this for a moment. Paul Feinbaum, one of the men with the largest audiences in sports today talking about football, said he had no right to express an actual fact on television if it hurt some people's feelings. Paul Feinbaum was exactly right. There are no federal laws that oppress people of color or blacks based on their race in the country today. That would be flagrantly unconstitutional. There is certainly a history of discrimination in this country based on race, but we have eliminated those laws through rigorous lawyering. If those laws still exist today, which I don't believe they do, they could be challenged and would be struck down by every court in America. But it's an alarming sign of where we are as a country, and in sports media in general, that a Jewish white guy like Paul Feinbaum, who I know doesn't have a racist bone in his body, feels compelled to apologize for stating a non-controversial fact on ESPN. The reaction to Feinbaum's comments had a chilling effect. If a white man, even one with a large audience like Paul Feinbaum's, can't give his opinion on Kaepernick's protest and demonstrate its inherent flaws without being attacked by a far left-wing mob and forced to apologize, what benefit is there in challenging Kaepernick at all? The shouting down of Paul Feinbaum on ESPN had a chilling effect on what could and couldn't be said by mainstream sports media figures. Why risk your job over this issue? The message to anyone who wasn't a far-left liberal was clear: shut your mouth. Regardless, the first part of this Colin Kaepernick statement, his assertion that minorities are being oppressed by the federal government, simply isn't true. Yet it speaks to the liberalism of the sports media that no one challenged Kaepernick on this opinion at the time he said it, and that even if someone like Paul Feinbaum challenged Kaepernick on it a few days later, he had to apologize for making a factual statement that made some people uncomfortable. A rigorous and unbiased sports media should have felt comfortable asking a question like this of Colin Kaepernick. What tangible decisions does the United States government, at the time led by a black man as president and a black woman as head of the Justice Department, make that oppresses people of color? The answer is there are none, which is why the follow-up question for Kaepernick should have been, can you give me actual governmental actions that legally treat black people differently in a negative fashion that you feel need to be changed? Again, once you demand that your voice be heard in this fashion, you need to explain what you want changed. I don't want banal generalities. I want specific issues that have so troubled you that you feel the need to stop standing for the national anthem for the first time in your six-year NFL career. Because here's the deal. When I review federal law in the present day, what I see is the exact opposite of black oppression. Everyone is treated as equally as they possibly can be by the federal government. There is no systemic racism in our federal government. In fact, affirmative action is actually a governmental attempt to treat black people unequally, that is, more favorably than other people, solely because of their race. If anything, the United States government's laws discriminate in favor of black people based on their skin color. I'm open to hearing what systemic oppression Kaepernick believes the United States government is undertaking and what he believes needs to be redressed. However, he has provided none of these specifics so far. If you want me to treat your opinions with respect, you need to provide opinions worthy of respect, not just insipid generalities. The first rationale for Kaepernick's protest, stopping the direct oppression of people of color and minorities by the federal government, doesn't exist. He's protesting a non-issue. Okay, what about police shootings of black people? Well, he's wrong here too. Let me explain. First, the paid leave comment is a sign of Kaepernick's painful lack of understanding. Police get paid leave when any shootings occur to allow an investigation to take place into that shooting. That's a union-negotiated part of all police contracts that has nothing to do with the race of who is being shot or whether police are justified or unjustified in the shooting. They aren't being rewarded for shooting someone with a paid vacation. This is a standard practice to ensure that if someone is behaving outside the law, they don't go rogue and continue to shoot people, white, black, brown, or yellow, with impunity. Furthermore, an automatic leave is given whether the shooting is justified or unjustified, questionable or unquestionable, whether the victim is unarmed and not dangerous, or in the process of committing serial murder. Kaepernick's commentary on police receiving paid leave in the wake of shootings is unsophisticated, uneducated, and significantly went totally unquestioned by anyone in the sports media. Second, if a police officer is, quote, getting away with murder, it's because one of two things is happening. One, the police department is covering up for a guilty party, or two, a jury fails to convict a police officer who has been charged with a crime. Let's discuss the second one first. If a police officer is charged with a crime and not convicted of that crime by a jury, it's because that jury didn't find him guilty beyond a reasonable doubt. Juries face difficult decisions and must reach a unanimous verdict to find a police officer defendant guilty or not guilty. Whether you agree or disagree with their decisions, if you're upset with the verdict, your issue is with our juries, not our police. So that leaves us with only one remaining rationale for Kaepernick's protest, that police are getting away with the murder of black people. Giving Kaepernick the benefit of the doubt, let's say that local police are getting away with murders of innocent black people and their wrongdoing is being covered up by the blue wall of silence. Okay, if that were the case, what tangible action would you request on behalf of your federal government to ensure that didn't happen? Maybe Kaepernick isn't aware that there is a state and federal system of justice in this country. If you're unhappy with the local or state level investigations, you could bring in the federal government's justice system to investigate as well. Maybe, to be very generous, Kaepernick was protesting to request more federal oversight of police shootings of minorities. Even though he hasn't been able to succinctly elucidate that goal, maybe what he's seeking is that the federal government ensure that local police departments didn't cover up illegal police shootings with biased and unfair investigations that favored the police at the expense of minority victims. You'd also want those investigations to occur in all cases of police shootings, not just those involving white police officers and black citizens, which represent a small percentage of police shootings in general, but Kaepernick hasn't expressed any issue with white people being shot by police, only minorities. That seems like a reasonable request, right? Well, guess what? President Barack Obama and Attorney General Loretta Lynch, and before that, Attorney General Eric Holder, were already doing exactly that. The federal government, which Colin Kaepernick was protesting, helmed up by a black man as president and a black woman and black man as attorney general and head of the Justice Department, was already conducting their own federal investigations into questionable police shootings of minorities. That's how we know, for instance, that the Michael Brown case in Missouri, the famous hands up, don't shoot case, was a lie, because the federal government, just like the state and local governments, cleared the police officer in that case. The federal government, representing the flag that Colin Kaepernick refused to stand for, was already doing everything it could to protect against citizens, including minorities, being wrongly shot by police. This means that effectively Colin Kaepernick's entire protest was about demanding an action that was already taking place. Putting it in layman's terms, Kaepernick basically walked into McDonald's and took a knee at 11:01 right when he believed McDonald's switched to serving lunch, demanding that breakfast be served all day long in McDonald's. And then the manager, hearing about the protest, could have walked out and extended his hand to Kaepernick and said, "You can go ahead and stand up. We already serve breakfast all day long here." But no one did that. No manager came out. No one in the media came out and told Kaepernick and the social justice warriors that breakfast was already being served, that what they wanted was already taking place. I voted for Barack Obama twice and think he was a good president who inherited a disastrous mess from George W. Bush, who I believe was the worst president of my lifetime. I can see many of you rolling your eyes as you hear this. However, if Obama would have simply come out and said, "I respect what Colin Kaepernick's doing and agree with him that far too many people in this country are victims of violence, but we are already conducting investigations to ensure that police officers who commit crimes are charged with crimes. What he's protesting for is already taking place." Much of the protest's moral imperative would have faded. This is where I believe Barack Obama, a liberal sports fan, fell victim to the same blind spot that the sports media, made up of almost completely liberal sports fans, fell victim to as well. They believed in Kaepernick's political stance, even if that political stance wasn't justified when you examine the logic behind his decision. They decided to side with feelings instead of facts. What's more, if you didn't agree with Kaepernick's actions, as likely many sports media did not, they saw what happened to Paul Feinbaum when he dared to question the legitimacy of Kaepernick's protest on ESPN. The lesson was clear. Don't say anything negative about Kaepernick if you want to keep your job and avoid being publicly branded a racist. The truth was this. Colin Kaepernick was protesting the federal government, demanding that they undertake an action that they had already undertaken. His protest made no logical sense at all. He was effectively taking a knee during the national anthem because he was opposed to the violent death of black people in America, yeah, join the club, bud. If you're opposed to violent minority deaths, do you know who you should be protesting, by the way? Not the federal government. You should be taking a knee to protest black violence against other black people, since that is the real plague on urban neighborhoods today. According to the most recent FBI statistics, over 93% of all black murder victims come at the hands of other black people. Look, I don't think Colin Kaepernick's a bad guy. I think he's just painfully unaware of the fact he was protesting the federal government demanding that they do something they were already doing. His depth of knowledge comes from Twitter, where inflammatory videos and fake news are the coin of the realm. As my good friend Fox Sports commentator Jason Whitlock likes to say, Colin Kaepernick is twoke, Twitter woke. Social media is great for making you feel things, but it's not particularly good at making you know what's true and what isn't. And it's certainly not very useful at all for educating anyone on complex facts. Far from being beneficial to our country, Kaepernick's protest inflamed and encouraged the propagation of a falsehood, namely that unarmed and innocent black people are regularly being murdered by police officers in this country. This is the biggest lie in 21st century American society. Let me share the data with you because it's eye-opening and because no one else in sports media will do it. One of the problems with sports and the larger media society in general is the failure to explain and share factual evidence if it contradicts our feelings or preconceived political beliefs. The Washington Post has a database that has cataloged all police shootings nationwide over the past several years. Let's look at those of 2016 and 2017. Combining the data from 2 years of this database, you will find the following stats. In 2017, police shot and killed 987 people, and in 2016, they shot and killed 963 people. Numbers for 2018 are tracking at roughly the same rates as well. Plainly, everyone reading this book, regardless of race, sex, gender, or religious affiliation, is opposed to violent deaths of innocent people. But police have violent jobs. And sometimes, albeit very rarely, they have to shoot and kill people who are threats to the rest of us. When police do shoot, do you know whom they typically shoot and kill? White people. In 2016 and 2017, there were 1,804 people shot and killed by police with their race cataloged in the Washington Post database. Here was the racial breakdown. 923 white. That's 51%. 456 black. That's 25%. 339 Hispanic. That's 19% Hispanic. 86 other races. That's 5% other races. 146 race unknown. So only one quarter of all deadly police shootings involve black people in the past several years. Despite what the media may tell you, many of these shootings would have been committed by minority police officers too. 75% of all police shooting victims in 2016 and 17 were white, Hispanic, Asian, or another race. So when Colin Kaepernick took a knee to protest police shootings of black people, he was actually ignoring the fact that 75% of all police shooting victims weren't black. Now, you can certainly argue that black people represent just 12 or 13% of the population, so these shootings, given that 25% of the victims are black, reflect racial discrimination. But remember, police don't interact violently with the vast, vast majority of us. Young men are typically the perpetrators of violence in America today. And as a percentage of their population, the most likely violent felons in the country, young black men. Despite representing only 6% of the population, young black men, those between the ages of 16 and 40, commit over half of all murders in this country. This isn't racism. These are facts. Although, interestingly, any fact that makes people uncomfortable is now labeled racist. And if you take into account rates of violent crime, you find out an interesting detail. Black suspects are actually less likely to be shot by police when violent criminality data is considered on a per capita basis. Remember, these are just acts of violent crime. I'm not talking about low-level drug offenses or nonviolent crime. Black people commit well over 25% of all violent crimes, including over half of all murders in this country. In other words, violent crime is not committed at the same rate by all races. Black people commit far more acts of violent crime than white, Hispanic, or Asian people do as a percentage of their population. And again, I'm eliminating nonviolent drug offenses from this data and just using the most recent FBI data on violent crimes. Okay, let's dive into the data more. How about unarmed people shot by police? Well, we have 2016 and 2017 data for that too. Presumably people who are unarmed are more likely to be innocent of any wrongdoing. Here are those combined numbers of unarmed deaths for the past 2 years, numbers which are similar to 2018 data at the time of publication as well. 52 unarmed white people have been shot and killed, 45% white. 38 black people have been shot and killed, 33% black. 22 Hispanic people have been shot and killed, 19% Hispanic. 4 other races, 3% other races. Now we're getting somewhere. First, what you'll see is that there have only been 116 people shot and killed by police who were unarmed in the past 2 years. Remember, unarmed doesn't mean without danger. Someone attacking an officer with fists or legs or reaching for an officer's weapon would be unarmed. The same is also true of someone beating up another person. Furthermore, many of these police shooters, despite what the media may show you, would have been minority officers shooting and killing minority offenders. That is, as small as these numbers are, the number of shootings that were white police officers shooting unarmed black victims is even smaller. Second, this is incredibly rare. How rare? Bees, wasps, and hornets killed more unarmed people in 2016 and 2017 than the police did. Bees, wasps, and hornets nabbed 118 of us to 116 killed by the police. If you don't carry a weapon, you were literally under more danger from insects than you were from police over the past 2 years. Putting this into even more context, you were 5 times as likely to be killed by a train as you were a police officer if you left your house unarmed in the past 2 years. Yet this factual data hasn't taken root in the sports community because it's less powerful than social media fear. Worse, the sports media praises athletes who share and further propagate this fear because it reflects the sports media's political viewpoints that America is an awful, racist place. In 2016, LeBron James said this about police violence and the Kaepernick protest. It's a scary-ass situation that if my son calls me and says he's been pulled over, then I'm not that confident that things are going to go well and my son is going to return home. This is just fundamentally untrue from a statistical basis. If LeBron had said, it's a scary-ass situation that if my son leaves the house with all the bees, wasps, and hornets in this country, I'm not that confident things are going to go well and my son is going to return home, and his son isn't allergic to bees, everyone would have ridiculed him. Yet he was universally praised for the wokeness of his take about police violence by the far left-wing sports media. This is unfortunate because sharing unwarranted fears about law enforcement makes police interactions between minorities and police more likely to end with violence. Indeed, here's another stat you won't see any other athlete or member of the liberal sports media share. In 2016, police were 18 and a half times as likely to be killed by a black person as they were to kill a black person. From a statistical basis, if somebody needs to be scared when a police officer pulls over a young black man, it isn't minorities, it's the police. Hell, if Colin Kaepernick really wanted to make a difference, he should have taken a knee for the police. Even the Washington Post, in an article about its own database of police shootings in 2018, would write that it was now difficult to argue there was any racial bias when it came to police shootings of unarmed people. The fear is real in the black community, but the statistical evidence isn't there to support that fear. Furthermore, if, as he stated in the protest, Kaepernick cares about, quote, bodies in the street and people getting away with murder, shouldn't he be focusing on all the people shot and killed by police since 75% of them are white, Hispanic, or Asian. Isn't it a flaw of his protest that he's focusing on a small minority of police violence victims? And if Kaepernick just wants to focus on minority victims of violence, shouldn't he focus more on the problem of all the people getting away with killing black people in America? Every year, thousands of black people are killed in this country. As I stated earlier, according to the most recent FBI data, 93% of all black murders are committed by black people. So the best way to save minority lives is to focus on unsolved black murders by partnering with police to solve those crimes, not stoking unwarranted black fears of extremely rare police violence. Kaepernick focused his protest on a tiny, tiny percentage of deaths. It was the equivalent of an obese man who weighs 700 pounds deciding his big toe is too fat. In so doing, Kaepernick ignored over 99% of black murders in this country in which race isn't involved to focus on the 1% that might, in some small way, involve race. In so doing, he managed to alienate people who would otherwise agree with him. People of all races, genders, ethnicities, and religions are against the murder of the innocent. Instead of uniting these people, Kaepernick politicized sports, the very place many of us go to escape the serious things in life, especially at this time in our country when unity is so rare. All of these facts matter, hashtag Fact Lives Matter, and provide substantial context and factual data to the Colin Kaepernick protest, which was motivated by feelings, not facts. Yet almost no one else in the sports media is writing it or saying any of this. Why? Because if they're white, Hispanic, or Asian, they're afraid of being called racist, and if they're black, they're afraid of being called an Uncle Tom. Remember, as Paul Feinbaum said in his apology on ESPN, he had, quote, no right to express his factual opinion on the oppression of black people by the federal government when it contradicted someone else's feelings. Why? Because he was white. Fear of being called racist is so powerful that Colin Kaepernick's entire protest, which makes zero logical or factual sense when examined in detail, could happen and virtually no one would challenge it. What's more, this fear of publicly being branded a racist wasn't just prevalent in the sports media. As you'll see in the next chapter, that failure and the fear of challenging Kaepernick's protest also led to the NFL's response being incredibly bungled and for ratings to collapse. All because the NFL, its commissioner, and its owners were afraid of sharing all the data I just shared with you. Make no mistake, the NFL blew it when it came to Kaepernick's protest, and the league paid a heavy price. Chapter 7. The NFL's Bungled Response to Kaepernick. Whether you agree or disagree with Colin Kaepernick's protest, you probably agree the NFL bungled its response to the protest. That's because at the time of Kaepernick's protest, the NFL had a specific rule in place mandating that players stand for the national anthem. It's not that controversial of a rule either. It's the same one that the NBA has. In late May of 2018, the NFL implemented a new policy for the anthem, which we will discuss in detail later in this chapter. You may feel, as I do, that standing for the national anthem is a strange way to begin a sporting event, particularly one involving for-profit professional businesses. You may also even stand in front of your seats in an NFL game, as I do, and wonder why the United States government is providing planes to fly over stadiums before kickoff. Or even stranger, why people feel compelled to cheer so wildly at the spectacle of a military plane flying over a stadium. The reason the NFL does it isn't complicated. NFL owners have decided that being firmly connected to the military is good for business. And if you're an employee and your boss decides something is good for business, guess what? You do it or you leave. It turns out that being patriotic was so good for NFL business that the league was actually paid by the different branches of the military for some of those tearful military family reunions you saw at halftimes across the country. You know, when a service member came back home and the kids and wives or husbands all gathered on the field for a spontaneous celebration that brought tears to our eyes? Paid advertising. Yes, the NFL got money to bring dads and moms back to their kids from wars overseas and surprise the youngsters. If that's not cold-blooded accounting, I don't know what is. That's why the NFL isn't a hero or a villain in the Colin Kaepernick story. It's just a big business, and big business wants what's good for big business, which is almost always more money. I respect the cold, hard logic of a balance sheet. That's what capitalism is, a valuation of a business from a numerical perspective. Whether you're a superstar quarterback or you sell beer at games for minimum wage, everyone can be reduced to a number. You're either worth what you're being paid or more than you're being paid. Otherwise, your job doesn't make sense from a business perspective, and your job might be yanked away at any instant. Trust me, I know. I've been let go twice in the sports media business. It's why I started OutKick 7 years ago, to control my own future. The NFL has long fancied itself as similar to the military. Coaches see themselves as field generals leading players/soldiers to battle for terrain against an evenly matched foe. They seek tangible geographic goals, first downs, while lining up in formations and battling it out on the offensive and defensive line in the trenches. Defenses attack the offense via blitzes, long offensive pass plays are called bombs, and offenses often adopt specific military jargon, the air raid, for instance, to signify their particular method of attack. Football, in both language and scope, is intensely militaristic. That's why it's not surprising that playing the national anthem at sporting events began as a gesture of support for the troops during World War II. During World War II, the playing of the anthem was much more than a gesture. Over 600 NFL players would serve during World War II, with 21 players dying in combat. The NFL's union with patriotism was, at least in World War II and later in Korea, a reflection of the gridiron greats' willingness to put down their pads and take up arms to defend the country. While baseball was a bucolic nation's national pastime, football was our preparation for combat. By the Vietnam era, that connection between football and military service had dwindled, partly because only 6 NFL players served in Vietnam, and partly as a result of the increasing wealth of football players. It's always been a rich man's war and a poor man's fight, and football players have become very rich men since World War II. While players like Pat Tillman, the Arizona Cardinals safety, who gave up the NFL to enlist after 9/11 and died fighting overseas, have received substantial and deserved acclaim for their sacrifice and dedication to the country, the number of actual NFL players who have been under fire serving the country is virtually non-existent today. Pro athletes are coddled multimillionaires who, as they rise in life, become increasingly unlikely to risk their lives for the country. In this, they are like most of the rest of the country. The more money you or your family makes, the less likely you are to enter the military and risk your life on behalf of the country. While the national anthem may well have begun as an ode to the servicemen overseas during World War II, the last good war that involved the military draft and soldiers coming from all strata of society, it owes its continuing existence to the fact that most of you reading this book right now have always heard the anthem at sporting events and never really questioned why. Plus, the military is made up of millions of NFL fans. The military, which is composed of many virile and fearless men and women in uniform, and the NFL, which is also composed of many virile and fearless men in uniform, see in each other an uneasy mirroring, a duality of purpose and dedication to teamwork and mutual unit advancement. Even without any real possibility of soldiers taking off their football uniforms and putting on military uniforms, that connection lives on because it makes the league money. Personally, I find the playing of the national anthem before American sporting events to be a strange anachronism. Pro sports are for-profit businesses designed to make as much money as possible. Teams and leagues are rapacious corporations hell-bent on extracting the largest possible profits from their enterprises. At its most basic business level, a stadium, which is frequently built with taxpayer money to allow a for-profit team to make more money, is a venue for watching an entertaining event. If we stand for the national anthem before sporting events inside our stadiums, shouldn't we also stand for the national anthem before movies and movie theaters? If the national anthem came on before the latest Star Wars movie, and everyone stood and removed their caps until the anthem was over, wouldn't that seem a bit strange? At least it would to those of us who are civilians. Members of the military have emailed me to point out that this exact thing happens on their bases. That makes logical sense to me, because standing and removing your caps before the entertainment begins shows respect for the military service that allows us to enjoy entertainment options. The reason that behavior inside a movie theater would seem strange to most of us is because we haven't been doing it for our entire lives. In general, there is much value in life to asking why we do things. This is one of many reasons why kids are so great, because they are young enough to ask why things happen instead of just doing them because we've always done them. My personal belief is that the national anthem shouldn't be played before pro sporting events. I think it makes more sense at college sporting events, since public colleges and universities are governmental institutions. I also understand this is a minority opinion. I once made this argument to my dad, and he was furious with me. To him and most others like him, the national anthem before sporting events is a sacred moment of shared reflection, a time to acknowledge that but for the sacrifices in service of our military, this game wouldn't be possible. When Colin Kaepernick set and subsequently modified his protest to kneeling during the national anthem, he stepped right into a national fault line. He was exploiting the weak underbelly of the NFL's policy of having players stand for the national anthem, begun, as always, for money. Prior to Kaepernick, most players had done what you or I do when the national anthem was played. They'd stood with their hand over their heart or stared off into the distance thinking about whatever they'd like. Some thought about the sacrifices of the military, some thought about their upcoming assignments, some analyzed which cheerleader was the best looking. Each of us has our own private reveries during the anthem. In the wake of Colin Kaepernick's protests, both the fans and the media spent an inordinate amount of time debating whether the kneeling was disrespectful of soldiers or not, and discussing the history of the national anthem. By the way, is there anyone less qualified to discuss the history of the national anthem than football players and analysts? But those were just sideshow distractions. The larger issue was this. Kaepernick's protest, whether you supported it or disagreed with it, was bad for the NFL's business, because the cardinal rule of NFL business and every business is don't alienate any of the people who pay money for your product. Reaction to Colin Kaepernick's protest largely broke along political lines. If you were a liberal Democrat, by and large, you supported the protest. If you were a conservative Republican, you did not. This is a generalization, of course, and many differed with the opinion of their chosen political parties. Many people tried to avoid taking a political position by stating they supported Kaepernick because he had the First Amendment right to protest, but that simply dodged the larger argument and was mostly untrue. Most people say they support the First Amendment when they support and agree with the underlying speech being made. If you're having trouble visualizing it, think of it this way. What would the reaction have been if Kaepernick had taken a knee to protest gay marriage being legal in the United States? Or what if he'd taken a knee because he believed abortion was murder? There would have been an absolute uproar with either of those stances too, right? Although, interestingly, then Kaepernick would have been a hero to many on the right in the country and a villain to many on the left. The same left-wingers calling Kaepernick a hero for kneeling to protest police violence would have demanded the San Francisco 49ers release or suspend Kaepernick immediately if he'd kneeled to protest the legalization of gay marriage. That's because the people who claimed they were supporting Kaepernick's First Amendment right to protest weren't really supporting his First Amendment rights at all. They were supporting the speech that they'd agreed with. If they really believed in the First Amendment, they would have realized that the moment Kaepernick made his opinion known, thanks to the marketplace of ideas in this country, everyone else would have had the right to agree or disagree with his position as well. What many miss, especially on social media, is this. The First Amendment is a two-way street. You have freedom of speech, but you don't have freedom from the consequences of that speech. I can't tell you the number of people who have reacted to my disagreement with Kaepernick's protest by arguing that Colin Kaepernick has the freedom to speak his mind. Of course he does, but so do you, and so do I as well. Which is why I think the example of Colin Kaepernick kneeling to protest gay marriage or abortion is so fascinating. It puts you to the test famously articulated by the French philosopher Voltaire. I disapprove of what you say, but I will defend to the death your right to say it. It's easy to believe in free speech when you agree with what the speaker says. The real challenge comes when you disagree with what the speaker is saying. As Larry Flint, the publisher of Hustler magazine, famously said, "Freedom of speech doesn't protect speech you like. It protects speech you don't like." As I've aged, I've come to believe more and more in the power of the First Amendment and come to see it as the most important right we have in America. I've also come to believe more and more in the power of boobs, but that goes without saying. Indeed, the underlying thesis of this entire book is this: if sports fans aren't able to say what they actually think, and if corporations restrict what their employees can say by rewarding or punishing employees for their political beliefs, then the marketplace of ideas is broken. Our country suffers as a result. It's only with robust, uninhibited debate that we reach a national truth. If people like Paul Feinbaum are shamed into retreating from their opinions because those opinions aren't politically correct or favored by large corporations and CEOs like Bob Iger, then we're ignoring legitimate debate to build artificial parameters of discussion constructed to avoid ever hurting anyone's feelings. Put simply, I don't care about your feelings, I care about facts. My standing as a First Amendment warrior comes as much of a surprise to me as it does to you. In law school, I didn't buy books for my third year classes. That was both to save money and because I was cocky enough to believe I could make good grades for the entirety of the year without going to class or reading anything. One of those classes in my third year spring semester was the First Amendment with Thomas McCoy, one of the most prominent First Amendment legal scholars in the country. I skipped the class for the entire semester in favor of working on a novel and going out drinking as often as possible. When I sat for the final, in law school, the only grade you receive frequently comes at the end of the year on a final exam, I thought and still believe that I did a fantastic job on the exam. Professor McCoy gave me a D. When I asked him to justify the grade, the exams are graded blindly and can't be altered by more than one letter grade without justification, he exercised his First Amendment right and claimed he'd lost the final and couldn't show me my graded exam. I never made lower than a B- in any law school class, and McCoy's D, which was the final exam of my entire educational career, was the only D I ever received in any grade in any class at any school. So it was awfully convenient that Professor McCoy couldn't find my exam. I think he punished me for refusing to come to class the entire semester. Several years later, Vanderbilt Law School, without a trace of irony, now aware that like many alums, I had achieved some measure of financial success, sent me a heartfelt plea to help endow a scholarship in the name of Thomas McCoy. I immediately exercised my First Amendment right to lose that request for a scholarship endowment in the trash can. Yet here I am, a First Amendment warrior who, as this book began, was in a battle to preserve his radio show over his simultaneous love of the First Amendment and boobs. While I didn't read any of the cases that year in law school or spend any time in class, I've later reread all of those cases and taught myself First Amendment law on my own. Most ironic of all, I have ended up with the same opinions as Thomas McCoy and probably become one of the foremost proponents in public life connected to sports, at least, of the marketplace of ideas, the First Amendment idea that all speech should compete for attention in the marketplace, and the best ideas will win. It's essentially wedding capitalism and evolution to the First Amendment. Now back to Colin Kaepernick and my hypothesis on what the reaction would have been if Kaepernick had kneeled to oppose the legalization of gay marriage and abortion by the federal government. Whether you agree or disagree with gay marriage and abortion being legal, Kaepernick's kneeling during the national anthem would have made sense then, because the federal government via the Supreme Court actually legalized, supports, and enforces gay marriage and abortion rights as the law of the land in this country. At least for the moment, that's a little Supreme Court justice humor for you. Unlike Colin Kaepernick's own protest, which requested that the federal government do what they were already doing, which was ensure that local, state, and city police were not getting away with the murder of minorities via conducting independent federal investigations, the federal government via the Supreme Court has allowed gay marriage and abortion. If Kaepernick had kneeled during the anthem to protest those court decisions, that would have actually made logical sense and probably rendered him unemployable, certainly by the San Francisco 49ers. As a First Amendment and boobs absolutist, I would have supported Kaepernick's First Amendment right to protest no matter what he was protesting, gay marriage or police violence, but I would have also understood why the decision to protest was so controversial and why it threatened the core of the NFL's business. Because what was happening was truly unheard of. A player in uniform at work, an employee of a specific team, was making a political statement in a manner that was incredibly divisive to the supporters of his team's league and business. It set the precedent that all NFL players, in uniform and at work, could also protest to draw attention to their own political beliefs. Interestingly, the NBA, which mandates that players, coaches, and trainers are to stand and line up in a dignified posture along the sidelines or on the foul line during the playing of the anthem, had its own controversy in 1996 when Denver Nuggets guard Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf refused to stand for the anthem due to his belief that the United States flag and the anthem was a symbol of oppression. In other words, nearly 20 years prior to Kaepernick, the NBA faced the exact same situation as the NFL. Then NBA Commissioner David Stern's response was swift and without leniency. He immediately suspended Abdul-Rauf, fined him one game check, or nearly $32,000, and refused to allow him to play in the league until he stood for the anthem. As a result, Abdul-Rauf's protest ended quickly, lasting just one game. Since that time, no NBA player has refused to stand for the anthem, and the league has faced no controversy surrounding its policy. Unlike NBA Commissioner David Stern, NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell did nothing for 2 years, hoping the controversy would disappear. When the league finally acted in May of 2018, it did so only as a result of the NFL's TV partners at Fox, CBS, NBC, and ESPN missing their projected budgets by over $600 million due to league television ratings dropping nearly 20% in the 2 years since Kaepernick's protest began. The league, the TV partners, and the owners all believed NFL ratings were down to a large degree because of the politicization of football. Regardless of what your own political beliefs are, losing nearly 20% of your viewership in 2 years is awful for league business. People don't come to NFL games to find out what players think about divisive political issues. Just like people don't go to the movies to see what Iron Man or Batman think about global warming. Imagine if before the latest Spider-Man movie began, Spider-Man, in his superhero uniform, came on the screen and told you that a woman deserved the right to choose whether to have a baby or not. People would lose their minds. The closest analogy to Kaepernick's protest is clearly Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf's NBA protest 20 years before, a protest that many of you are probably reading about for the first time on the pages of this book. That's because Kaepernick, like Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf, protested in a time of relative peace and didn't have an actionable goal with his protest. That makes both Kaepernick and Abdul-Rauf substantially different from either Muhammad Ali or Tommy Smith and John Carlos at the 1968 Olympics. While many, notably Kaepernick and his defenders, have sought to link Kaepernick's protest to Muhammad Ali's opposition to the Vietnam War and Tommy Smith and John Carlos's Black Power salute at the 1968 Olympics, those men's actions were substantially different. As a boxer, Muhammad Ali was an independent contractor responsible only for himself. And as Olympic athletes, Smith and Carlos made their gesture one time at the end of their careers as Olympians. Most significantly of all, none of these men were employees of companies or playing in leagues at the time of their political protest. Further, Ali in particular was protesting a specific action by the federal government, and his protest was controversial because of the content of the protest, not because of the method of his protest. Most people don't oppose Kaepernick's stance, they oppose the method by which he made his opinion known. "Ain't got no quarrel with them Viet Cong" was a mission statement. Muhammad Ali wasn't going to allow himself to be used as propaganda justifying the Vietnam War. What was Kaepernick actually protesting? As we said earlier, a very generous reading of his political statements would suggest that Kaepernick was protesting the killing of innocent black people by police officers. If so, who is actually opposed to this stance? In other words, who out there in America today thinks police should be killing more innocent people regardless of their race? What Kaepernick is in favor of is already supported by 99.999% of Americans of all races, creeds, religions, and ethnicities. Most of the negative reaction received by Kaepernick was directed at the method of his protest, refusing to stand for the anthem in uniform on the field, not the actual protest itself. Unlike Kaepernick, Muhammad Ali had a concrete and controversial goal, the end of the war in Vietnam, and his protest eventually ended when the Vietnam War ended and he returned to box. Kaepernick? Even he had no idea when his protest would end. Asked that specific question in the aftermath of his protest beginning back in 2016, Kaepernick said as follows, "Yes, I'll continue to sit. I'm going to stand with the people that are being oppressed. To me, this is something that has to change, and when there's significant change and I feel like that flag represents what it's supposed to represent in this country, I'll stand." As you can see, even by reading this strangled series of sentences, Kaepernick's protest had no goal, and he himself said he had no idea when that protest would end. Except, you guessed it, ESPN's Adam Schefter reported Kaepernick was prepared to stand for the anthem if he was signed in 2017. By 2018, that report was being challenged amid Kaepernick's collusion lawsuit directed at NFL owners for failing to sign him. So Kaepernick's protest may or may not still be going on and may or may not have ended. We don't even know at the time of publication. As if that weren't enough, Kaepernick protested the United States flag when Barack Obama and Loretta Lynch, the two most powerful people in the federal government, a black man and a black woman, were already doing exactly what he wanted them to do, but was potentially willing to end his protest after Donald Trump was elected and Jeff Sessions became Attorney General. This would have been like Muhammad Ali dropping his opposition to the Vietnam War right as Richard Nixon escalated the war. It's just flat out nonsensical. Especially when you consider that Colin Kaepernick's protest, unlike Ali's, which helped to end the Vietnam War, might have been so inept that he could have swung the election. Let me explain how. Donald Trump won the states of Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin by only 83,161 total votes. That's fewer than watch a single football game in Michigan's Big House, Ohio State's The Shoe, or Penn State's Happy Valley. Is it unreasonable to believe that around 42,000 football fans in these states might have switched their votes from Obama in 2012 to Trump in 2016 as 8 million voters did nationwide because of Kaepernick's protest and the resulting exhaustive media coverage of that protest? I don't think so. If you believe that 42,000 football fans in the Big Ten states of Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin could have changed their votes over this issue, as I do, then it's not a stretch to believe that Colin Kaepernick's protest cost Hillary Clinton the election. At some point, maybe Hillary can add the Kaepernick protest to the approximately 28 different explanations she's already given for why she lost the election. Not only was Kaepernick's protest nonsensical and lacking in any coherent strategy, he managed to work against his legitimate goals. But let's return to the Muhammad Ali comparison and explain why, despite what Kaepernick's defenders would argue, he's nothing like Ali. In April 1967, Ali refused to register for the draft, stating, "Why should they ask me to put on a uniform and go 10,000 miles from home and drop bombs and bullets on brown people in Vietnam after so-called Negro people in Louisville are treated like dogs and denied simple human rights?" This was a bit of theatrics, since Ali, like all famous Americans, including Joe Louis in World War II, wouldn't have been put on the front lines if he were drafted. He would have been used as a prop to increase soldier morale and entertain the enlisted men. The worst thing that could have happened to the war effort would have been Ali being killed overseas. The military knew that, and Ali did too. But he also believed the war was a bad decision, and he was smart enough to point out the inherent hypocrisies that existed in modern American life. When Ali refused to submit to the draft, he was stripped of his heavyweight titles, fined $10,000, and sentenced to 5 years in prison. Though Ali never served time in jail, and after 3 years, the Supreme Court overturned his conviction and allowed him to return to boxing. He did become a prominent opponent of the war, using his platform to speak out against the Vietnam War on behalf of all Americans, and memorably synthesizing and exposing America's existing racial hypocrisy by remarking, "Ain't no Viet Cong ever called me." Ali's decision was a brave one because it directly contradicted the existing precedent set by another black heavyweight champion from the South, Joe Louis, who had enlisted in the segregated armed forces during World War II, saying, "Lots of things wrong with America, but Hitler ain't gonna fix them." Interestingly, both Louis and Ali have been proven to be correct in their stances, but Louis's military service receives a fraction of the attention Ali's refusal to serve does. Why? Because most Americans agreed with Louis's stance when it came to fighting against Hitler. But what if Louis had refused to serve in World War II and had said whatever Hitler offered to the world was no worse than America's treatment of minorities? Certainly, some would have supported Louis's statement at the time, but I think the verdict of history would have been vastly different. Regardless, I think you'd agree that the consequences of Ali and Kaepernick's stances are much more different than they are similar. The American government sought out Muhammad Ali to demand that he undertake a specific action, and when he refused to do so, they took away his boxing title, stripped him of his right to make a living, fined him thousands of dollars, and sentenced him to 5 years in prison. Kaepernick undertook a voluntary protest, his team supported him, the NFL levied no punishment during the season, and he continued to cash his multi-million dollar paychecks throughout the rest of the season. What's more, unlike Ali, whom the government wanted to put in jail, the federal government, through President Obama, actually supported Kaepernick's protest. The only possible consequence for Kaepernick has been that no team has been willing to sign him as a backup quarterback since his protest began. But again, much of that has to do with Kaepernick's own behavior. The Baltimore Ravens were prepared to sign Kaepernick before his girlfriend called the team owner a racist plantation owner and compared Ray Lewis to an Uncle Tom. The Seattle Seahawks were prepared to sign Kaepernick a year later, but Kaepernick refused to share his plan regarding the national anthem. Ultimately, however, the biggest difference between the two men is that Ali's protest sought a tangible goal, the end of the Vietnam War on behalf of all people. Kaepernick's protest sought an outcome that was already taking place, ensuring that local police shootings were investigated by the federal government. I'm making this the goal of Kaepernick's protest because it's the only tangible thing I can see that he protested. What's more, and I think this is a massively important distinction to repeat, Ali was not an employee. He was an independent contractor. Just as Floyd Mayweather today can get away with issues of domestic abuse because he's his own boss, Ali didn't have to answer to an employer for his political stances. He wasn't playing for a team in the NFL, the NBA, the NHL, or Major League Baseball, and he wasn't protesting inside the ring before a boxing match. Anyone out there analogizing Muhammad Ali and Colin Kaepernick is pushing a political agenda with no factual support for that argument whatsoever. Kaepernick's protest from a historical perspective is nearly identical to the NBA protest of Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf, a player most of us have long since forgotten. Now let me put my lawyer hat on and talk about Colin Kaepernick's protest from a legal perspective.